Today on Movie World, as we give you our final update from Tribeca Film Festival 2017. Time for Movie Rollers. This is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your daily dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter from the Tribeca Film Festival 2013. And here we are. We're all checked out of our hotel. We've seen our last movies for the film festival. So just doing kind of a live recording from
the street.
The street.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Before we separate our ways and take different flights.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I'm off to Boston for a work engagement, but you guys are heading back
We're
home.
We're heading back home, yay.
Goodbye, Tribeca.
Yes.
It's been
we
a good
shall
one,
miss
hasn't
you.
It?
It's super fun, but you know what? I am now fatigued.
Well, that's part of the fun of being at a film festival,
I think that's
right?
Lack of sleep more than
yes.
fatigue from the films. It's yeah. kind of like having a good time takes a lot of energy.
It does. And when you're having a good time, you don't mind being a little...
Yes.
You know, sleep yes. deprived.
Yes. Yes, yeah, I'll try not to dribble on you on the plane if you're next to me.
Oh, God.
She does do that when she's this tired.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
My mouth forgets to close.
Not that we
close.
Want everyone to kind of break out the violins for us, but we are completely beat. This has been an intense few days. You know, the part of the challenge of doing Movie Rollers straight from the film festival is we do our recordings on the day of whenever we can. Which is fun.
Yes.
But we're up usually till like ridiculous hours and then we have to be up early for yes. the film fest. So it's intense. But it's good fun.
Okay. So why don't we get started?
Sure. Let's go.
Okay. So the first movie of today, and we have 7 to cover today. And I think there are some duplicates. Yazdi, you and Joe watched some of the same movies. So the first one is The Clapper, which Yazdi, you saw on your own. And this is basically after the death of his wife, Eddie Crumble moves to Los Angeles looking for a fresh start and becomes a professional paid audience member for infomercials and other live studio tapings with his best friend, Chris. So we have Tracy Morgan, Ed Helms, Amanda Seyfried, Adam Levine's in this. This has a great cast. So Yazdi, what did you think of The Clapper?
Yeah, so I think The Clapper is going for a very mainstream comedy kind of routine. And it's, you know, it's got a script which seemingly is meant to comment on how we are, you know, as an audience right now in terms of making celebrities out of anyone, pretty much. So it's trying to get to a topical issue. It did not resonate. The tone for the movie did not resonate as well for me. But, you know, it's got a great cast. It's got Ed Helms. It's got Amanda Seyfried. As you mentioned, it's got Tracy Morgan. It's got Leah Remini, Russell Peters. Adam Levine is here. So, you know, a lot of good actors you can watch here. There were also some tonal inconsistencies. I think for a movie like this, I think it might have worked better if they had pursued a really dry, you know, tone. Something like The Lobster, you know, like a bone right. dry tone to it. Whereas
was it going out for like an all-out comedy type thing
yes,
here?
Yes, physical comedy?
Little bit, actually, yes. But more of it is just, you know, regular comedy. And I think it plays it too mainstream. I think if it had been a little bit more off-kilter, it might have gotten more laughs, for sure.
Okay. So I will drop my clapperboard, take one, and move us on to the next movie, which was, Joe, one that you saw,
Frank
which
Serpico.
Was Frank Serpico. And this is one I really wanted to watch.
So Frank Serpico is a USA-based documentary. And according to the Tribeca notes, this is the description. With unprecedented access to a notoriously reclusive subject, Antonino D'Ambrosio creates a powerful portrait of Frank Serpico, the former New York Police Department officer who in the 1970s blew the whistle on the corruption and payoffs running rampant in the department. The true story that inspired Sidney Lumet's American crime classic Serpico that bears his name. So this is on the actual Frank Serpico, and I suspect he's not still alive. But
no,
we'll find out. Okay, he's
yeah,
still alive.
He is indeed. He's alive. They caught up with him, really. I mean, he's been notoriously hermit is probably the wrong word to use here, but he has tried to stay out of the limelight because you know, his role specifically in exposing police corruption when he did in the 1970s led to, you know, some danger. There's some suggestion in the movie and certainly in the I think it's Sidney Lumet directed Al Pacino starring movie Serpico, that when he ended up being shot in the face and part of a drug bust, wow, the police were not particularly proactive in getting him help. Now, whether or not that is, you know, conspiracy theory or conjecture, the film kind of leaves that one up to us to decide. But it's a fantastic portrait of a man who really, you know, did what many of us would aspire to do, which is stand up in the face of wrongdoing and take on, at great danger to oneself, a system that you believe in but has become inherently corrupt. And this is exactly what the man did. You know, it speaks a little bit about his early life and some of the things that influenced him, particularly his father, who, you know, drummed into him the importance of never running when you're right. You know, and that's kind of how he handled this. He still has bullet fragments in his face from when he was, you know, injured in this drug bust gone wrong.
Wow.
But, you know, there's all sorts of suggestions that, you know, this was perhaps set up by police that were not particularly friendly to him, because, you know, plainclothes police back in the day were all involved with the drug deals, with the drug lords. It was kind of a dirty relationship, but it was necessary for crime fighting in back in the day. But because of that, the inherent corruption crept into the department. So, fantastic portrait of a man here. This is a very well-made documentary. I think it lays out certain facts for us as an audience to judge, which is always my favorite thing when a documentary does that. You know, and I'll end it with a quote, because I think that really sums up the man himself, which is, you know, in a free society, a police officer's first responsibility is to the country that he serves and the community that he serves, rather. And they had forgotten that a long time. And, you know, with all of the things that kind of keep coming up in the news about police brutality and you know, the various political issues, you know, for police first to remember that they belong and are part of the community in which they work is really something that this man carries within him as part of his DNA, and we would all be better to remember that.
Wow, it sounds good. It sounds like there's a lot of documentaries, and certainly the two that I saw are a lot about like government and police force and what's right, what's wrong, the corruption mm-hmm. of power. That seems to be a theme maybe in some of a lot of the documentaries at this year's Tribeca Film Festival.
No, it is, absolutely.
And they're very topical documentaries, I think. So,
yeah. And we'll be talking about one more that Joe and I saw later on, which is Cop Watch, which
right.
kind of definitely
right.
taps onto the same
right.
issue.
Okay, so that's a good segue, actually, into the next one, which I saw on my own, which was Get Me Roger Stone.
And I think I'm introducing that one, so bear with me as I flip to the page next to Frank Sapico, handily, my Tribeca film guide. So this is another documentary, USA, part of the Spotlight documentary series here at Tribeca. And this is directed and written by Dylan Bank, Daniel DiMuro, and Morgan, I'll say, Payne. And so basically the description here goes that with his bespoke suits and collection of Nixon memorabilia, political firebrand and noted eccentric Roger Stone has been a fixture of Republican politics since the 1970s. Yet, at the same time, Stone has always been an outsider to the political establishment. So, Rashmi, what did you think of this one? This looks fascinating.
Yeah, this was a fascinating documentary about a very eccentric, larger-than-life gentleman. And I didn't know much about Roger Stone. I only started hearing his name during the recent election, where he was an advisor to the Trump campaign. This man is, I mean, the only way to describe it is this is frightening and entertaining all at the same time. He has these rules which he lives by, and clearly he is exactly like the Joker. This man revels in chaos, wants to cause chaos, and if you don't hate him, he's not happy. So where the end quote of the movie is, what would you say to everyone as they loathe you when the credits run? That's what the filmmaker says to Roger Stone as the credits are just about to run. He said, if you loathe me, then I've done my job. That means I was effective.
Wow.
I mean, so this is a great documentary. It takes you back in time. Roger Stone was actually one of the youngest people to be indicted as part of the Watergate scandal of the Nixon era. And clearly, you know, he Nixon was his hero. Mm. He actually has a hero. He has a tattoo of Nixon on his back, not because he says he idolizes Nixon, but because it reminds him that basically, the fight never ends until you quit.
Right.
And he is all about winning, and he will go to any length to win. And so it's interesting to me, given the fact that there's going to be some, you know, FBI inquiries into the whole links with
Russia.
Sure. Russia, that this was filmed before that. So the period this is filmed in is just leading up to the election.
Wow.
And so it's got people like Paul Manafort, and they're being very honest. And I'm actually shocked that the filmmakers have been allowed to release this, because they're not that they're implicating themselves in anything. I wouldn't be the judge of that. But there's certainly some interesting words put on film. And, you know, it basically Roger Stone and Trump, Donald Trump, have had a relationship for the last 30 years. And he has dreamed this for the last 30 years.
I mean, in their defense, they probably made those statements before the whole, investigation into the Trump ties with Russia kind of came forth.
Correct.
Yeah, so they're probably more candid then. Yeah.
Stunning documentary. In terms of documentary making, I mean, it keeps your attention the entire way through. It's more talking heads than, you know, fancy graphics or any data that's thrown at you. This is all about people and their relationships, but it's mainly about Roger Stone. And it follows him around the city, and it follows him around his career. And honestly, I think the Joker character is based on him.
Wow. That's
I mean, this
I'll
is a man
out.
Who literally, I'll say it again, who revels in chaos and creating chaos.
And then is the movie kind of vindictive of him, or it's non-judgmental, or?
It sounds a little bit like that.
I don't think
yeah,
it's
good point,
judgmental. It's really his own words. And of course, it's probably been edited to give you that point of view of him, but he's a very entertaining guy. I mean, this guy is charming, and you can't help but listen to him, even though what he's spouting is complete nonsense. This is like the essence of the conspiracy theorist. Brilliant documentary, Joe. I think you will get a lot out of this one.
Terrific. I'll make sure
I would definitely
check
recommend
it out.
That you watch this. This is very good. Okay, so after I saw Get Me Roger Stone, another one I really wanted to watch was Cop Watch, and I will introduce that one. Okay, so Cop Watch is the true story of an organization called We Cop Watch, whose mission is to film police activity as a non-violent form of protest and deterrent to police brutality. So this looked like a really good one that I wanted to watch. So Yazdi, Joe, you both saw this. Tell me what you thought.
So I think this particular topic is extremely, extremely relevant to what's going on right now. I think particularly around the time of the elections, we've had, you know, even in the last couple of years, we've had so many issues which are at the confluence of race and, you know, police, you know, race and police.
Brutality?
Not brutality, but police
conflict with the community.
You know, yeah. And where race and, you know, police oversight kind of intersect. And, you know, we've seen the Trayvon Martin case. We've seen, you know, the case in Oakland about the guy who was shot. And,
yeah, the Fruitvale Station, Freddie yes. Gray, Eric Garner here in New York.
Exactly. So repeatedly there's been this issue.
Michael Brown, of course.
And I guess at some point, right around the time that the situation happened in Oakland, a small group of people came together and they formed this Cop Watch organization whose goal was essentially to be always ready to have a video shoot available whenever you see any kind of, you know, heated interaction between police and civilians. And it seems like such a bare bones group of two or three people, but they are really impassioned about this, and they truly believe that it is their constitutional right to be able to film these and to present it as evidence. Because very often, it, you know, it always comes down to he said, she said, and you know, invariably courts will always air towards, you know, on the side of enforcement. So, you know, so I think depending on where you stand politically on this issue, this movie will kind of, you know, resonate accordingly with you. But it's kind of interesting because it takes up the case of three individuals who were involved with filming certain key pieces, which went viral. and got the whole country incited and started a lot of the protests. And it kind of follows those individuals through.
And I guess it's related in a sense, like you said, Joe, to Frank Serpico in a way where you do want the police force in a way to have that you do want them to be empowered to do what they need to do to keep the rest of the community safe. But where does that line? So, it seems like it's about judgment. And is that something that's covered?
Somewhat. I mean, I'm going to tie the kind of the Serpico message to this documentary in the sense that this documentary, in my mind, vilifies almost all police. I don't know if that was the intent, but it certainly, suggests that the establishment is rotten. And I think, to the point made in Serpico, it's rotten individuals within the establishment that really, lead to some of these situations. And I think there is definitely problems with the way policing is done. I think these are people who go out there and put their lives on the line. But I think my main challenge with this documentary is that it's definitely politically charged. It's trying to be somewhat incendiary because in some ways it's a call to action. I think there's a part of me which feels that the original founder of Copwatch feels that by having things recorded, it enforces some level of accountability. Police might behave differently if they're on camera, so there's some prevention aspect to it. And he says at one point in the movie that he's never caught one of these horrific deaths or injuries by police on camera. You're right, he's done a lot of filming, he goes out with a camera, but he's never actually had to he's never been party to one of those. And I think there's a suggestion there by that, let's keep these people honest. Let's keep honest people honest by, making them think and a bit more accountably in the heat of the situation.
And I guess, is there any reference made to the fact that, a lot of the uniforms are going to be fit with body cameras? Do they feel like that's a good solution?
No, they don't get into that. And I think that it's one of a number of missed opportunities here. I mean, I feel like the film is well made, but it's a little unfocused. I feel like it does go down a bit of a rabbit hole by suggesting some sort of conspiracy against one of the guys that filmed one of the murders. I'm not going to speculate on that because I don't know the facts of the case myself, but there's definitely this suggestion that the police went after him hard for things that he had done specifically because he had made this tape. And I wished it had been more a little bit more about cop watching than this particular thing. But you cannot also summarily dismiss the fact that this man had some things in his past that were certainly given greater scrutiny because he had riled some people within the force by taking the video of the this was the one who in Staten Island I think got suffocated to death on the street. So it was I thought it was a well-made film. I just felt that there's a little unfocused in places and as such a little bit of a missed opportunity to draw more attention to the name suggests.
Yeah, I think this is such a hot button issue. It's such a raw nerve right now that this could have been a really provocative, angry piece. And not that it isn't, but I think it could have been so much more than what it is.
Right.
One thing, it did touch on, and Joe just mentioned about it, is this whole issue about, and this happened very recently with the whole United Airlines incident where they, manhandled and pulled this doctor out.
We get ready for our United flight.
Yes, and then, United started posting this stuff saying that this doctor had been previously arrested for other things. So it kind of taps into the same issue here that this particular one person who has collected this video, very soon after he does that, the police come up with all these other background checks for him. And not that they shouldn't do that, but the timing of it is very suspect. So I don't know who's playing that game and if it's real or if it just happened to be coincidental, but it's a smoking gun for me. There's something there for sure.
And actually, Yassi, that is a great segue into the film I saw, which was Acorn and the Firestorm. So not to cut you off, but it has that same, the same
premise
in the sense of, I think we are at a strange time in communication with all the internet and the communication and lobbyists and PR firms, that really the person with the most power and the most money ends up winning the argument simply because they can flood the universe with misinformation or wrong information and completely change the mind. So I'll let you do the intro and then I'll tell you about the movie, but the theme is very similar.
So the movie is Acorn and the Firestorm.
Yeah, and it's directed by Ruben Atlas and Sam Pollard. And it's an American documentary. And the Tribeca notes say that for 40 years, the community organizing group ACORN advocated for America's poorest communities, while its detractors accused it of prompting government waste and the worst of liberal policies. Riding high on the momentum of Barack Obama's presidential victory in 2008, ACORN was at its social zenith when a hidden camera video sparked a national scandal and brought it all crashing down.
So all I can say is I'm happy I saw this one after. I watched this straight after the Get Me Roger Stone, because they're almost like two halves of the same story in some way. Both highly political documentaries, one about this, you know, the rise of the Democratic Party with Obama being nominated in 2008. And then, you know, the recent election that we just went through in 2016. And really, this movie starts by saying it's always easier to beat somebody than build something. Right. And so it kind of almost carried on that same theme that was explored in Roger Stone, which is about misinformation and wrong information. And as long as it's not illegal, you can do whatever it takes to win. Now, the difference here is I think what it cemented in my mind, I'm not going to get political, but I think what it solidified in my mind is at no point, I think, in the history of the U.S. have we been on this tense knife edge of understanding the difference between the need for helping people and the need for helping people help themselves. But unfortunately, I think where we've ended up is that the people that we're talking about are all the same group of people. Yet, and this sounds very political, but yet I think at the end of the day, the corporations and the privileged are doing it at the people's expense.
Sure.
And that's what this solidified for me, right? Mm. So I think it's very, I know, I'm feeling very cynical now and worried and scared. And but I think at the end of the day, the big man wins and corporation wins. And so I think ACORN was this very ripe organization that was ready to be taken down by people who it was going to hurt, i.e. big business.
So it's interesting. The material clearly has you engaged in the sense that you're talking about the material as opposed to the filmmaking of itself.
Correct.
So, that sounds like that very very much resonated with you as a viewer.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of a documentary, I don't think it's anything exceptional. Mm-hmm. It's not in terms of the film, the art of the documentary. But it's so provocative, and it really comes from two angles. And what's interesting to me is what ended up taking ACORN down mm-hmm. was a 20-year-old pastor's daughter. And she and this guy basically dressed up, and they went into ACORN offices, and they basically posed as what went viral was she was saying she was a prostitute. He was her pimp, and they were trying to smuggle women from El Salvador and trying to get free housing. And so then this went crazy wild. They basically ended up taking these bits of video, shopping them out to Breitbart. Yeah, shopping them out at like Breitbart and Fox News, and it went viral and crazy.
Wow.
And ACORN got shut down. Basically, not shut down, but federal funding was withdrawn from ACORN, which basically, you know, destroyed the movement, which had done really good things. And then it was found that these were re-edited tapes. These were edited and they hadn't gone in costume and all sorts of things. But the damage was done, right? I think, again, for me, the point of the documentary, I think the really good point that came across to me is that there doesn't seem to be accountability for facts.
Right.
And that can really hurt a lot of people.
Again, a topic very relevant to what's currently.
Yeah, what's really interesting is that the founder of this movement, ACORN, actually almost has the same message as Roger Stone, in that you have the right to fight.
Right.
We can't guarantee that you win. That's the difference. Whereas the Roger Stone one is all about winning
right. And
your right to fight. So again, it was really good to see these two back to back. So great documentary, ACORN in the Firestorm, I think it's called.
Yes.
Okay. So let's move on, because I know that time is ticking. The last film that you guys saw was The Boy Downstairs, and this is one I was also interested in but couldn't make. So this is a first-time writer-director, Sophie Brooks. It's an original romantic comedy, so a true Yazdi movie, coming-of-age tale of a young writer looking to find her way back in New York City after a two-year stint in London. And this stars Zosia Mamet. I'm glad you saw this, because this is one that I had cited before we came to Tribeca. So did I miss something good?
So I'm going to pay this movie something of a compliment, in the sense that it had very much the same sensibility as Girls and the TV show Girls. So I say that because it comes from, in my mind at least, a very youthful perspective. It's got that kind of very youthful female sensibility to it. And, you know, because it shares an actress with the show Girls, and it's I believe it's set in New York, it has very much that kind of that same kind of feel. But with that said, I think this was a very effectively made movie. I think the chemistry between the leads worked for me. I don't think it's a little rough around the edges at time, but it's very competently made, and I think the performances and the dialogue are appropriately snappy. Is it my kind of film? Perhaps not as much as others that I've seen here at the film festival, but it's definitely an enjoyable time for me in terms of the film.
Was this a Yazdi movie?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very much, it's playing at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's very much set in New York. It has that Noah Baumbach, Woody Allen sensibility. It's about people who are neurotic, but in a nice way. And it's very, very much, first world problems. These are all very affluent, very well-to-do people. And it's about, like Girls, and it's just about them trying to find a place for themselves in life and figuring out relationships. And, we've seen 100 movies like this. I think what really makes this work is because it's very well written. It's written and directed by Sophie Brooks, and it has that feminine perspective to looking at things, but it also is very honest, I thought. And I also thought, in particular, the Zosia Mamet, I've only seen her in Girls, and I've never really known
and
that.
And Wiener Dog,
yes. And I've really not known her to, kind of take on a pretty hefty emotional role, and she kind of comes through pretty well.
She's
She was great, while
and
still
different.
Carving out a character who you wouldn't necessarily call nice.
Okay.
I mean, she's not nice. She's full of neuroses and full of she's human, and she
and
makes
different
mistakes.
To her Girls character.
Yeah, not as extreme as her Girls character, but I think a little bit different. But it's just, it's so well written, and it's so beautifully performed, and it's heartfelt. So kind of, even though you've seen 100, romantic comedy set in New York where people are neurotic, while this movie doesn't add anything to that, it takes a very comfortable place next to them, which is not bad at all.
No, that's not bad at all.
I would definitely recommend this movie. Very well written. And again, she was a revelation to me.
Yeah, and it does something interesting in that, it tells the history of this couple through flashbacks. So we're not actually aware for much of the movie. You clearly know they've had some history, but you're not aware of who did what to whom until, much later on in the film. So, I think that was kind of nicely done as well, in that it kept the story from being too kind of obvious and linear. And, it's a rom-com done in the nicest way.
Okay.
Where you can see the characters' history and its relevance to things that are happening right now. So I thought it was a nice movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more movies I see, the more I realize how much of a emotional footprint 500 Days of Summer has left. I mean,
literally
right before Aaron, this movie, they all kind of owe this non-linear storytelling in terms of you're dissecting what happened wrong in a relationship and going back and forth in time. They all kind of follow that. So
terrific stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. So that should bring an end to our...
No, we have
one more
movie to cover, Yazdi.
This is the final movie now.
Because we are going to end on a bombshell.
Oh,
which
yes.
is the Hedy Lamarr story. So again, just to recap the title, Bombshell, the Hedy Lamarr story. It was in the special screening section of the Tribeca Film Festival. It's a USA documentary. Written and directed by Alexandra Dean. And the description here of the movie, as we swipe away mosquitoes from what seems to be a mosquito-infested lounge area outside our hotel. The documentary is described as starlet, screen siren, the most beautiful woman in the world. All phrases used to describe 1940s Hollywood actress Hedy Lamarr. Alexandra Dean's illuminating documentary adds radio technology inventor to the list. Known for her matchless beauty and electric screen persona, Lamarr's legion of fans never knew she possessed such a beautiful mind. So, Rashmi, what did we miss with this one?
Today was Doc Day. This was the final movie of the festival for me then. So I'm embarrassed to say I didn't really know much about Hedy Lamarr. I'd heard her name. But this just sounded fascinating to watch. A documentary about not only a very successful Hollywood star, but also someone who had this other side to her, being this inventor. And so, you know, we can thank the fact that we have secure Wi-Fi and secure satellites and missile communication systems to Hedy Lamarr, because she is actually the person who dreamt up the idea of frequency hopping, which I never knew about. The documentary doesn't really bring anything new to the genre, I think. You know, it's a fairly linear story. It starts with her life and her evolution to becoming a Hollywood actress. She was actually born in Austria, Vienna, and then because of the war and Hitler, she managed to escape, and escape to Hollywood she did, and created this new life for herself. She's kind of a troubled soul. But clearly, again, when I was talking yesterday about geniuses, all these people who are kind of broken almost have like an extreme of talent in some area, and she has it twice. She was incredibly beautiful, and actually Snow White, the Disney version of Snow White, is based on her, as is Catwoman, apparently. So, you know, she was very revered as a Hollywood actress.
And she was one of the first true Hollywood female superstars.
Correct.
You know?
Correct.
And to think that at that time, I mean, we're talking about what?
The 1930s and 40s.
Yeah, I mean, close to like 80, 90 years ago.
Yeah.
She had this intelligence that she kind of almost, she was prescient in terms of seeing these ideas. And she put patents on hundreds of innovations.
Yes.
And there is virtually no model right now of anybody in Hollywood I know who's also an exceptional inventor or a scientist.
Correct.
A super intelligent person.
Correct. And
so,
she was good friends with Howard Hughes, and actually influenced him and told him how to design the wings on his plane to make them go faster. Yeah, I mean, she's an incredibly intelligent person. And she was also interesting in the sense that when she was much, much younger, she did the first nudie films in Austria. So there's a lot to this woman. It's told through the eyes of a journalist who found a tape while she was in her 70s, and through her children. And she had, you know, six or seven husbands,
wow,
two children, an adopted child that she gave away of some sort.
Wow.
Complicated soul. Yeah.
Documentary worth watching now?
I think if you have interest in film and Hollywood, again, you know, it provides some of that history of how studios were treating actors and actresses. They were more commoditized.
Right.
Remember, they belonged to the studios. Mm-hmm. And just about a historical view of, I think, almost like an American dream in some ways. Hmm. Someone who has to leave where they are and come to a new place, and what that does to them.
I think this would be great fodder for a really interesting biopic.
Yeah,
if somebody wants to make it. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, and it's I think it is coming.
Oh, okay.
Diane Kruger did a lot of the narration of some of the letters,
okay,
and she's part of this thing called the Hedy Project. And I haven't had a chance to see whether the Hedy Project is actually a film that's coming where she's going to maybe play her,
okay,
or whether it's something different. But I'll make a commitment to finding out. But
good
documentary.
Terrific stuff. So that indeed does wrap up our coverage, at least live from the fest, Tribeca 2017.
Live on the street.
Yeah, I know. I think this is kind of a first for us. We've done podcasts from airport lounges before, but never while roaming the streets of New York.
Well,
so
why not?
Hopefully the sound came out okay. If it didn't, then email us. We're happy to tell you more our opinions about the movies. So yeah, it's been a wonderful time here. You guys
Thank
are flying
you,
back tonight.
Thank you for giving us our passes.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, the film festival goes on and through, I think, till the end
to
of
the
April.
30th of April, yes.
So, you know, it's still a few days to catch the film fest if you can, and if you if you haven't already got tickets, then you know, get out quickly online. As we said yesterday or the day before, there are Rushline tickets available, and I think you've got a reasonable chance if you're here within an hour or two of the movie starting of getting into one of these.
I think we covered 34 movies.
Yeah, that is that a record for us?
Possibly.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, somehow it didn't feel quite as hectic last year, but we had a terrific time.
And we'll be back next year.
Indeed, we will. New York, be ready. So I guess we'll sign off for now. We'll get back to our respective homes and hope you've enjoyed our coverage of Tribeca Film Festival. Definitely check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of the whatever it is, Facebook/movieworlds.com. We'll have a summary of the movies out on the website as well, so do take a look at that. We will just recap what we did in the same way. Yes, you did a really nice job last year. So that if you can do that again, I think that would be a lovely summary. So, yeah, Movie Wallace signing off from Tribeca 2017. Until next year. Too many film festivals. Too little time. That was terrible. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.